Life.
Hello, and welcome back to Shattering Myths. As we transition from the ills of man and his institution to the truth of Yah, particularly to that which he has asked us to do if we wish to engage in a relationship with him, which is to walk away from our country as opposed to held our hand out asking our country to supply our well-being. I have a few quotes from Benjamin Franklin. Now, Benjamin Franklin is not, from my perspective, the wisest man who ever lived, and certainly not the most moral. The wisest that I have ever known is a fellow named Dode. His name means love. He was the author of most of the Psalms. You may know him as David. Here's some statements, though, from Benjamin Franklin. He said, democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch. You see, it is the tyranny of the majority over the minority. Democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch. The most famous most appropriate quote, anyway, from Jefferson happens to be the one that I'm going to read next. When people find that they can vote themselves money, that will herald the end of the republic. And that is precisely what we have done, not only as a nation, but as a world. This will be the best security for maintaining our liberties. A nation of well-informed men who have been taught to know and prize the rights which God has given them cannot be enslaved. It is the religion of ignorance where tyranny begins. If you know that Yahweh gave us the gift of his Torah teaching, if you know that Yahweh gave you the gift of life, if you know that Yahweh gave you the gift of free will, if you know that Yahweh gave you a nesama, a conscience, so that you could exercise good judgment and therefore make good decisions, so that you could choose whether or not to embrace Yahweh and his covenant, then if you know these things, you cannot be deceived. You can't have your government enslave you. No matter what your government does to you, you remain free. Any fool can criticize, Franklin said, condemn and complain, and most fools do. We're witnessing them in action across Europe today. Speaking of what is happening in Europe and their enraged nature, whatever is begun in anger ends in shame. Only a virtuous people, Franklin said, are capable of freedom. As nations become more corrupt and more vicious, they have more need of masters. Indeed, and that is what's happening around the world. We were sharing a passage from the Torah. We were showing the Christian critic, the Christian apologist, who says that it's impossible for us to observe the Torah, just how the Torah is observed. And we were observing it by reading it. This passage from the Torah, it is from the opening statements in the fourth chapter of the book entitled Devarim. Devarim means words. And now, Yisrael. Yisrael means individuals who engage and exist with God. Listen to and understand, Shama, hear God's clearly communicated prescriptions of what we should do in life to live. Examine his choke, is what he's saying. A choke are inscribed thoughts and engraved recommendations on how to be cut into the covenant relationship. And also listen to God's means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, the misfot. It's the basis upon which good judgment is exercised and sound decisions are made, which, as a result of the relationship, I learned and am teaching. You see, Moshe, as the scribe of Yahweh's Torah teaching, learned by writing down the words that Yahweh was teaching all of us. And as a result of the Torah teaching, he was in a position to guide all who would listen to him recite the very teaching which came from Yahweh's Torah. So he says, listen to and understand God's clearly communicated prescriptions of what we should do in life to live, and to God's means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, which as a result of the relationship, I learned and am teaching accordingly, for you to act upon, for the purpose that you will be restored to life and continue to live. Now, where was this teaching from? Where were these clearly communicated prescriptions of what we should do in life to be cut into the relationship? Where are they to be found? Where would we look to find God's means to achieve justice and resolve disputes? What book is Moshe referring to? There's only one. Only one. The Torah. That is the entirety of what Moshe learned. It's the Torah. And so if you want to follow the advice of someone who enjoyed a personal relationship with Yahweh, who was taught by Yahweh himself, where should you turn to find God's prescriptions for living? Where should you turn to find God's means to resolve the disputes which separate us? Where should you turn to learn? Where should you turn to have your life restored if you wish to continue to live? Chaya. Where would you look if you wanted to know and understand the means that God has provided for us to come home, to return to Him? It's only one place. It's the very book that we are reading. It's the very book from which Moshe garnered this information, which he is passing on to us, the Torah. And now Yisrael, individuals who strive and engage with God, listen to and understand God's clearly communicated prescriptions of what we should do in life to live, and God's means to achieve justice and resolve disputes, which as a result of the relationship I learned and am teaching accordingly, to act upon, to engage in, to celebrate, to gain and profit from, for the purpose that you will be restored to life and continue to live, and that you will come to return, and you will become an heir, receiving as an inheritance by occupying the land, the realm, which as a result of the relationship Yahweh, God of your fathers, gave as a gift to you. You want to live with God in His promised land? Do as Moshe did. Learn from Yahweh by listening to His testimony as it is presented in His Torah teaching. You should never add to the word which relationally and as a blessing I am instructing you all with, and you should never subtract from it to properly observe the terms of the covenant of Yahweh your God, which as a favor I am directing you all with. So, here is the summation of the Torah teaching. And Moshe is not only telling all who will listen, all who want to engage and endure with God, he's not only telling them that this Torah is the source of life, that this Torah is the means to return to God and to live with Him in the promised land. He is not only telling them that the Torah means teaching. He's not only telling them that it is the source of life eternal. He is telling them that it is a complete presentation, that it provides all of the answers that you need, that it provides all of the directions that you require. That it is complete, which means that there is no need for or place for a Christian New Testament. There is no need for nor place for an Islamic Quran. There is no need for nor place for a Book of Mormon. Do not add to the Torah. Don't. Not a word. and do not subtract from it, as Paul would have you do in his letters. And you should observe, now, after encouraging us to listen, shema, we are told that we should choose to shamar, observe. Observe does not mean keep, other than to keep your eyes focused upon. It means to examine and to consider, so that you come to know and understand. And you should observe, closely examine, and carefully consider, and you should act upon and engage in this in order for you to be wise, for you to have the capacity to think properly, for you to be discerning, benah, to possess information and respond morally and rationally, in addition to gaining perspective. Now, there is more. But before we move on to more, let's pause and let's think of this statement. So, Moshe, who Yahweh provided his Torah, writing it for Moshe according to Yahweh, placing it beside the Ark of the Covenant so we would understand the relationship between the Torah and the covenant relationship, has Moshe tell all who would listen that the Torah means teaching, it means guidance, it means direction, that it is the source of life, that it is the source of our return to God so that we can live with Him, that it is complete, totally sufficient, that nothing should be added to it, that nothing should be taken away from it. And then he says that not only should we never add to the word, which relationally is part of this Torah instruction, you should never and never abstract from it. Why? So that we can properly observe the terms of the covenant, the mitzvah, the codicils of this agreement of Yahweh, your God. Because that is the essence of Yahweh's direction, his sawa'eth. What he is directing us with. Then he says, you should observe. You know, examine, carefully consider. Why would you want to carefully examine and consider this? So that you can respond appropriately. So that you become wise. So that you are discerning. So that you gain perspective. It is the essence of making an enlightened choice. It is the purpose of our nesama. Our ability, God-given gift, of exercising good judgment. We are to think, not to believe. Hello and welcome back to Shatteringness. I am your host, Iyada. You are welcome to engage in this conversation by calling toll-free 877-300-7645. I am particularly taken by the realization, which I guess came to me fairly late in life, and not of my own doing, so I'm not taking any credit for this. But as a Christian, I was always of the belief that being Torah observant made you Jewish, and that being Torah observant means that you tried to follow the law, you tried to keep the law. And the more I would study the Torah, the more I realized that Torah was not comprised of law, but instead of guidance and teaching for us to learn from. And that the word that was translated obey was actually shama, listen. And the word shamar that is properly conveyed as observe only means keep in the sense of keeping focused upon. You know, using your perception of sight to read something. So that you come to know what's there and understand it. So that it was fairly late in life that I realized that if you actually, openly, rationally, intelligently consider what being Torah observant means, the only informed, rational conclusion that is consistent with Yah's instructions in this regard is that you observe the Torah by reading it, by carefully examining it, by considering all of the nuances of each of the words that he has chosen to use. So you don't add to his words, but you examine with great scrutiny the words that he has chosen. And that under these circumstances, the Torah is easy to observe. It just requires an open mind, an investment of time, and a willingness to consider the testimony that Yahweh provided to us in the original language, which you don't even have to know Hebrew to do, because there's so many wonderful tools that are available to us, such as interlinears and lexicons, for us to be able to do this very thing. And so here God in his Torah is telling us that the reason and benefit for observing his Torah is that we are then in a position to act upon it, to engage in what it offers, to respond to what God is providing. If you don't know what God is offering, if you don't understand what God is offering because you have chosen not to observe his Torah teaching, then you are squandering the gift of free will. You are squandering your life. Because it is only those who have come to know and understand Yahweh and what he is offering that are in a position to accept and act upon his gift. And so God says, I want you to be observant, to read, to examine, to consider my Torah, so that you're in a position to act upon it, to engage in it. And that by doing so, you will become wise. You will gain the ability to think properly. You know, thinking is all about making connections and understanding the difference between that which is true and that which is false, that which is reliable and that which is not. When you have the proper foundation and the proper perspective, both of which are provided through the Torah, you're in a position not only to understand and be wise, but also to be discerning. It provides us with the proper perspective, which is what this sentence is saying. So you should observe and you should respond to this in order for you to be wise, for you to be discerning, in addition to gaining perspective. The family who by association listens to all of God's clearly communicated prescriptions, this is Choke, inscribed thoughts and engraved recommendations which cut us into the relationship, and declares them, communicates them, calls others to them, exclusively, to the exclusion of anything else, that family will be wise. That family will possess the ability to think. That family will be discerning, be in. That family will understand the information, because they will process it thoughtfully, rationally, and morally. And they will be considered worthy and great among people everywhere. If you want to be considered worthy, not only by people everywhere, but worthy by God himself, then not only come to know and understand what God has taught us in his Torah, don't only respond to it, but share it with all who will listen. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We are in the midst of considering Yah's perspective on his Torah teaching and what we should do with it, which is to observe it, and in particular, what things we should consider most diligently. You know, he has said that we should focus upon his prescriptions for living to cut us into the relationship, that we should focus upon and consider the terms and conditions of his covenant, that we should consider and be thoughtful regarding the means to exercise good judgment and the means that God has provided to achieve justice while resolving are disputes. Those are the three critical aspects of the Torah, his teaching and guidance that God has said that we should focus upon, that we should observe, that we should listen to, so that we come to know what he has to say, so that we can act upon his testimony, so that we live forever, and so that we return to God and have the opportunity to live with him in the promised land. And then he goes on to say that don't add anything to it, don't take anything away from it. And he's in the midst of a very protracted discussion on telling us that what he values most is those who not only know these things, but come to know them to the position and to the point where they can proclaim them. That's why I consider David, to be the wisest man who ever lived. He came to know Yah's Torah teaching, to understand what God was offering, and wrote songs that help us observe the Torah so that we come to understand how to observe God's directions and guidance as well. Now, in this regard, Steve from Pennsylvania is on the line, and I think he has a specific question on the concept of the Book of Enoch. Hello, Steve.
Yada, how are you doing today?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah, in light of even what you previously just mentioned in the last segment about adding and or taking away, it's my understanding that Enoch could not and did not write the Book of Enoch. And I'm in the middle of a couple of conversations with some different people, and I just find that book is a little unreliable and untrustworthy. I was hoping to get your insights and thoughts.
Yeah.
On what, because I believe you probably looked into this and a lot deeper than I have, and it's disturbing to say the least, because people come up with the craziest things of, you know, demons coming down and mating, you know, the whole sons of God, you know, impregnating the sons of and daughters of man. And yes. I just think it's...
From Enoch. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that comes from Enoch is a lunar-based Sabbath. And the justifications for a lunar-based Sabbath are also derived from the Book of Enoch. You know, my exposure to the Book of Enoch, and this is pertinent to our discussion, because God said, don't add anything to my teaching. And so we have to decide whether or not Enoch is from Yahweh or not from him. And the Yahweh, in the same book that we have been reading, which is Devarim, provides in the 18th chapter a very detailed explanation of how we are to go about determining whether or not something is from Yahweh or someone is a false prophet, whether or not that book is unreliable. And he provides us with seven criterion in the Book of Enoch. And he wants to do this because he wants us to think. And I was in correspondence with a messianic individual that wanted my endorsement on his book, and I not only wouldn't endorse the book, but what I said is, if you come to the realization that the covenant has not yet been renewed, that Paul was a false prophet, and he says, you know, I think that when we take it upon ourselves to determine what is acceptable in the canon or what is not, you know, we go astray. In other words, he just accepts that the Christian New Testament is scripture because somebody before him canonized it. And yet God gave us, and I told him this, God gave us in his Torah the specific means for us to individually determine whether or not something was inspired by Yahweh or not. And he would not have done that if he didn't intend for us to use his advice so that we could determine whether things like Paul's letters or the Book of Enoch were inspired by him. Now, the number one issue with Enoch you've already raised. It is impossible that Enoch wrote it. Enoch didn't write anything that we have access to. Enoch lived well before not only the formation of the covenant with Abraham, but well before Moshe scribed the Torah on behalf of Yahweh. And so to accredit him with writing the Book of Enoch would be foolhardy. The oldest evidence that we have of the formation of what became the Book of Enoch dates to about the 3rd or 4th century BCE. And it was still in its formative stage, becoming the book known as Enoch today, even through the 2nd century BCE. And so, since Enoch was a not-so-distant relative of Adam, he most certainly didn't write the book. So it's credited to an individual who did not write it. That's deceitful to begin with. Now, we then have to move to prophecy. There are no fulfilled prophecies in Enoch, so it doesn't have God's signature. The biggest issue with Enoch is, like Paul's letters, although Enoch is not nearly as grievous at this as Paul's letters, it is the source of false teaching. Those who go off on an agenda and want to justify some odd perspective either turn to Paul or to Enoch. And that alone should be sufficient to render the book as not inspired, because it's the only source which contradicts the overall theme of Yahweh's teaching. So as I look at the Book of Enoch, I personally discard it, because based upon my studies of it, it doesn't meet the criterion that Yahweh provided in Devarim 18 of how we are to evaluate that which is from him and that which is not. And I find that since it is universally quoted by those who are opposed to Yah's principal teaching regarding his covenant, that it is therefore counterproductive as opposed to being useful. Does that answer your question, Steve?
Yes, it does. And I just want to quickly just thank you for your perspective on that. And it's good that we're discussing this, because many of the people I'm having these conversations with do listen to your program, and I just wanted your insights and perspective, because that's going to be helpful, and I agree with you. And I mentioned, you know, we've been given that gift of an Nesama beyond the Devarim 18 criteria. There's something in me that just, I see those red flags, and I feel that when I've read it, and it just doesn't click. I believe that's a gift from Yah just saying, hey, wait a minute here, you might want to check this out and really consider what you're reading here before you just incorporate this and start trusting in some of these things that may, you know, very likely not be for me. So thank you again for your perspective there. I believe that's helpful to me and hopefully others.
Well, Steve, and what your conclusion there, we agree on most of what you said, but not everything you said. And the key aspect of what we just talked about is that I'm happy to share what I've concluded, but it really, God's whole perspective on this, his whole instruction on this, is that he gave you, as you acknowledged in the Psalm, so that you yourself can do what you've done, which is you investigated it, you read it, you exercised good judgment regarding it, and you came to recognize that it is not inspired scripture. It is not something that fits in with Yah's overall testimony, which means that our conversation can be reassuring, in that two people independently using the same criterion, which is Devarim 18, Yah's testimony regarding recognizing false prophets, came to the same conclusions for the same reasons. But the primary thing I want to emphasize is that you did the right thing. You read it. You investigated. You applied Yah's specific standard. And you came to the conclusion, using your conscience, to recognize that which is not true. And so I think that's spectacular. And I also think that any time then you have a conversation with somebody who has deployed the same perspective, the same standard, and you both come to the same conclusion, that's reassuring. That's why I, by the way, like the Yada Yah forum so much, is that what I find there is open-minded, rational individuals who are well-informed, scrutinizing something and coming to a perspective that is consistent with Yah's overall teaching and advancing their understanding and finding others who have been through the same process. And all of those things are highly commendable. It's exactly what God just said here. You know, he was specifically telling us, he says, if we're observant, then we can properly act. And that we, by being observant, become wise. We become discerning, which means discriminating. We can differentiate between what is true and what is false. And that by being observant, which is what you were, you gain perspective. Now, one last thing, thought on Enoch, since you brought it up. The two things that come out of Enoch is a kind of a warped sense of spirituality and of ascribing Yah's spiritual envoys and messengers with the ability to perform sexual acts and being able to reproduce. Yosha himself told us that Yah's messengers, whom we mislabel angels, are non-sexual creatures. They do not mate, and they therefore do not have offspring. And so this whole notion that they mate and produce offspring is inconsistent with Yahusha's teaching regarding his messengers, and even the words that Yahweh uses to describe them, which he referred to them as Shaba. And Shaba is a command and control regime. It is, they are envoys who follow Yah's orders. They don't have free will, which makes them less than we are, but they are eternal creations, which makes them greater than we are. But the Enoch perspective is inconsistent with Yahweh and Yahusha's presentation of them. Also, Yahweh is insistent that we focus upon and come to understand his promise to us that is embedded in his formula of 6 plus 1 equals 7, with 7 being the epitome of perfection, but that of 7 being the sum of 6, which is man plus God, who is 1, equaling 7, and the Enoch aficionados will come up with an entirely different way to determine the Shabbat or 7. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yetta. We were in the midst of a discussion specifically about the logical conclusion that the Book of Enoch not only was not written by Enoch, but that it was not divinely inspired scripture. And we now have a call from Jeff in Texas, who would like to discuss Genesis 6 in light of Enoch, specifically because in Genesis 6 there is a discussion of the sons of God breeding with the daughters of men, and how all of that would make sense if you discard the Book of Enoch. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. You have a question, or did I summarize your question?
You did. And more specifically, how are you defining the sons of God, and how are you defining the daughters of man, and
sure.
how would you define the words, you know, giants?
I'm
curious as how you would.
Yeah, sure. Let's deal with the first one. This is how Bereshith 6:1 begins. Indeed, because what my definition is irrelevant. My conclusions are irrelevant. The only thing that's relevant is what Yahweh has taught us in His Torah. His position means something. So let's look at what he said. Indeed, it came to pass that mankind defiled and profaned the face of the earth, and increasingly daughters were born to them. Okay, so mankind here is written as Adam. There are a number of Hebrew words to define humankind. Enoch, for example, means mortals. Ish means individuals. The Hebrew word Adam, though, speaks of of men who are descended from Adam, which means these would be men who are born with a nesoma, the ability to differentiate between right and wrong, good and bad. And with a nesoma, they are individuals who have the capacity to come to know and understand Yahweh and to have a relationship with Him and therefore become Yahweh's sons. So it came to pass that mankind, Adam, which are humans with a nesoma, that's the one thing, the only one thing that made Adam different than other Homo sapiens that were occupying the planet at the time, is that Adam was given a nesoma, which means he was given a conscience in addition to a nefesh soul. And so increasingly the daughters were born to them. So what happened is that Adam and Chawa and their son left, were expelled from the Garden of Eden. They went out into a world that had Homo sapiens, human beings, that did not have a nesoma, and they mated with them, and the product of that marriage gave birth to children who then inherited the nesoma, the ability to exercise good judgment. And so then it says, the sons of the Mighty One saw that the daughters of men were really beautiful. So now they took any of them they chose and desired as their women and their wives. And so the sons of God here, the only ones that would qualify for that are those who were conceived in God's image, which is to have a nesoma. And then it goes on to say, Yahweh said, my spirit will not remain in or contend with nor plead with mankind, Adam, for an unlimited duration of time. Also, as a result of him being flesh, of him being a physical construct, his days shall be limited at 120 years. So here, God is saying that ultimately he has nothing to do with that which is physical, that which is flesh. He's spirit. And flesh decays. That which is material decays. And it is his spirit which transforms us from being physical and mortal to being spiritual and immortal. And so God is saying, you know, there's a limited period of time that I'm going to continue to engage and contend with and put up with the physical nature of man and his corruptibility. But he does not say that there's a limited time that he, as a spiritual being, is going to contend with humankind, which is born anew unto him. Unfortunately, we're out of time in today's program, but Jeff, we can talk more about Bereshith 6 in a future program if you'll call back in. I'm Yada. This has been Shattering Myths.
Hi folks, this is Pastor Butch Paul. Please allow me to share some very